comments for us, the post can recommend that one should request later rather than earlier. There is a Gemara in Nazir, but the Gemara says that there is a principle of Dovah Shalav Bali Oilom. Just like I cannot sell a Dovah Shalav Bali Oilom, so that's why I cannot appoint a Shliach to sell on my behalf a Dovah Shalav Bali Oilom. Let's say I plan to buy the Brooklyn Bridge, but I didn't buy it yet. So I cannot sell the Brooklyn Bridge to you. Rabbein says, I can sell a Brooklyn Bridge to you. I can sell a Dovah Shalav Bali Oilom, Likishayav Bali Oilom. We paskin that now. I cannot sell you a Dovah Shalav Bali Oilom, even though the Kenyan isn't going to be Chal till it's going to be Bolo. Right now it doesn't belong to me, so I don't have the ability to. So the question is, can I appoint a Shliach to sell the Brooklyn Bridge after I'll buy it? And it'll belong to me, at that time it'll belong to me. Can I appoint a Shliach now that he should serve as my Shliach later to sell it? So the Gemara says, no, Milsa Dehiwa Lamotzi Ovid. Shliach lamotzi mashri. You cannot appoint the shliach on a matter that's lo boliyom that you yourself wouldn't be able to accomplish the chalois now. So that's what the Paskin point out. When the rabbis send out in the shul bulletin already the week after Purim, all the balabatim get the notice in the mail that if they want the rabbi to sell the chametz for them, they should fill out the form and appoint the rabbi as a shliach. So when you appoint the rabbi as a shliach to sell the chametz, that's cool on the chametz that you already possess. That if you would want to, you would be able to sell that chametz yourself. What about the chametz that you're going to buy in between the time that you appoint the rabbi as a shliach and the time that it comes to our Pesach? So that chametz you yourself didn't have the ability to sell the week after Purim. That's a dovah shalav bali oilom. So strictly speaking, you cannot appoint the rabbi as a shliach to sell a chametz that you yourself wouldn't be able to sell. So the Paskim say that bottom line, we probably are mekel, we rely on the assumption that it's an act of zachen li'adam shaloi b'fonov. Once the balabas expresses his interest in the rabbi selling the chametz to him, so regarding the chametz that the balabas already had before he made the minui hashlichas, that's a real minui hashlichas that the rabbi serves as a shliach to sell the chametz of the balabas. Regarding the chametz that the balabas is going to purchase after the minui hashlichas, so he couldn't appoint a shliach and a dovah shalav bali oilom, but still, the rabbi knows that it's in the best interest of this balabas that I should sell his chametz. I can't sell the chametz for the balabatim of Paramus and the balabatim of Passaic or the balabatim in Highland Park. They could taste it that they're interested in me selling their chametz. Maybe they don't want to sell it at all. But the balabatim came to me and they asked me to sell their chametz. Please, rabbi, sell my chametz. So on the chametz that they had the ability to appoint me as a shliach, I function as a shliach. On the chametz, regarding the chametz that was lo bali oilom, that they didn't have the ability to appoint me as a shliach. And that, the Paskim said, we rely on the principle of zachen li'adam shalai b'fonav. The taina against this, of course, is the famous ktsois in Choshen Mishpat, and he has the same idea in the Avne Miluim and Eben Ezra. He coined an expression, he coined the phrase zachen li'adam v'ein zachen me'adam. You only say Zachen Liadam Shalai Befonov. The original Mishnah of Zachen Liadam is an Erevin. When I want to give you a Matan and you're not here, so I give the Matan to someone else who is here, and it's Kain on your behalf. The Mishnah in Erevin tells you how to make an Erevin Chatzeris. Streamline. If you want to do it the way it's supposed to be, so if you have a community with 3,000 Jews, each Jew is supposed to be give a Matzah Shlema. You're supposed to have a container that has 3,000 Matzahs in it. And who's going to have all these matzahs in the shul? Who has room for all the matzahs? The Mishnah says if you want to streamline it, then make it bekitzer. So you have one person go to the store, buy a box of matzahs, and he gives the box of matzahs to someone else to pick it up. And the Mishnah says in Erevin, we use the principle of Zachen Liadam Shalai B'fonav. The one who picks up the makes the kinyan hakbo on the matzahs, and we have all the 3,000 families, can be kind of the maton on their behalf. Zachen Liadam Shalai B'fonav. So the Tzai Sachoshin has this argument. He claims he has a Rashba in the Dorim that makes this distinction. You only say Zachen Li Adam Shalai B'fonav if I want to give you a matana that you're going to get for nothing. And you are not here, so I give the matana to the one who is here, and it's kind on your behalf. But Zachen Me Adam, to take someone's chametz and to sell it, he didn't authorize me. I know it's in his best interest. Yeah, best interest. But you're not giving him a gift. You're taking away from his possession, taking away from his property. I'm selling the Cheerios that he didn't have on Purim. He buys a new box of Wheaties every week. He buys a new box of Cheerios. He didn't have that box of Cheerios on Purim. He bought it after he appointed the rabbi as the shliach on the Mechilas Chometz. So you're going to say Zoch and Yodim Shalai Lefonov to take away the box of Cheerios from him. So the Tzais has a Taina, he thinks he has a Rashba, and the Dorim and the Aflamen Hey, who seems to say that you don't apply Zoch and Yodim Shalai Lefonov in such a case. So the minig is not like the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch says not so. The Ramah and Hilchas Chala quotes the Poskim and say not like the Tzais HaChashin. Tzais HaChashin picks on that Ramah. The Ramah quotes the Trumas Adeshin that you do say Zoch and Meyodim. And the Tzais raises an objection against it. But the minig is against that Tzais HaChashin. The fact that Hazanish has an essay where he claims that there is no such Rashba. He says the Rashba doesn't exist and there never was such an opinion. Okay. Whether there was or there wasn't, the minig is not like the Rashba. So by the Mechira's comments, preferable would have really been that all the Balabatim should wait till the last minute. After they bought all the Chametz, then go to the Rabbi. That's going to be very taxing on the Rabbi. Rabbi has a community with 500 Balabatim. They're all going to come there at Pesach in the morning. All 500 Balabatim are going to come to Pashayim and the Chametz. They'll make him crazy. He has to have time to sell the Chametz to the Goy also. So we rely, so the Mahadran should wait. His reasoning, Eina Magdim on the Mitzvahs. The Mahadran, the Bnei Torah, should postpone their appointment of the Shlichus of the Rabbi to serve as the Shliach for selling the Chametz to later. And as far as the non Mahadran, they do it early, and we rely on the Zoch Leon of Shalai Lefonov. The Rambam writes that the minig is when the Balabatim appoint the Rabbi as a Shliach to sell the Chametz on their behalf, that the Rabbi makes a Kinyan Suder. The Rabbi gives them a handkerchief or whatever, some kind of a beged, a kli, in exchange for which they give over the power of attorney to the Rabbi. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Mechira that this is not a din, this is only a minhag, and he says no kinyan is needed, and the kinyan is not even chal, and it doesn't make any sense. But then he says that's the minig, and he knocks a little sense into it. He says the idea behind making the kinyan when you appoint the shliach is to demonstrate that your appointment of the Rabbi as the shliach is done b'leit gomor. And therefore the Rambam says, since that's the only reason that the minig makes sense at all, what if the Balabas appoints the Rabbi as the shliach from Mechiras Chametz? And he says explicitly, B'leib gomor amarti dover zeh. And I mean it with all of my heart. Then there isn't even any need for the minig to make the Kabbalah's Kinyan Surah. So that's what the Rambam writes in Hilchas Mechira, in the beginning of Hilchas Mechira, that the Kinyan Surah that's made in connection with the minig HaShliach of the Rabbi for selling the Chametz doesn't really make any sense. So they quote that the Chazon Ish and the Stipler were not practicing rabbis. They were Talmidei Chachamim, but they were not synagogue rabbis. So they never sold their own Chametz. They always used to go to a practicing rabbi to sell the Chametz for them. Like Rav Soloveitchik was also not a practicing rabbi. So every year he used to go to the Boston Rebbe to sell the Chametz for him. Boston, the Rebbe's son says in Boston, whoever doesn't believe it, he can show you all the Shtari HaShoah from 30 years. When Rav Soloveitchik signed every year that his father should sell the Chametz on his behalf. So the Chazon Ish and the Stipler, when they used to go to their local Orthodox rabbi and appoint them as a shliach to sell the Chametz on their behalf, they never held from the Kinyan Suda, because the Rambam makes one of it, so it's a minig shtus. So what do you have to fulfill a minig shtus? That was what they felt. The Rav Soloveitchik felt not so. The Rambam starts off by saying it's a minig shtus, but then he knocks sense into it and explains why it does make sense. Rav Soloveitchik was a big stickler on making this Kinyan Suder. He said that even if a Balabas, every rabbi has this experience, Balabas calls 5 minutes before the Mechiras Chametz. This year he can't call because it's on Shabbos, so no one's going to call the last minute. But that's usually an Erev Pesach. In the morning when the rabbi is about to start dealing with the Nachri to sell the Chametz, so he's in the middle of the Mechiras Chametz. So one Balabas calls up from the office all frantic. I forgot to authorize you to sell the Chametz. I want you to sell the Chametz. So he didn't sign any Shtar HaShoah. He didn't make any Kenyan Suda. So what do you do? So strictly speaking, you can appoint the Shliach Bal Peh. You don't have to have any Shtar. You don't have to have any Kenyan Suda. But Rav Soloveitchik said the minig is that you do make a Kenyan Suda. So he said, Eitzis, how you should make the Kenyan Suda, how you have to fulfill the minig, even if the Balabas calls on the telephone. He thought that the Rambam explained the minig, and it's not a minig shtus, that it does make good sense. We usually have the custom, it's not a din, it's a custom that before Bedikas Chametz, somebody puts out 10 pieces of Chametz in advance. The two explanations that are given for this, they quote, I think, in the name of Rashi, and the Baal Yad Tesis, that there is a concern if you'll say it, but you don't say a bracha, Shekirishana b'mitzvahs v'tzivano, Al Bedikas Chametz. The bracha is recited, Nusach HaBracha is Al Bir Chametz. So what are you going to do? You're looking, you're doing Bedikah, but what do you do if you don't find any Chametz? So then it's going to turn out that the bracha is a bracha levatov. You say, I'll be your chametz. You're not going to be destroying any chametz. So the quote from Rashi, some Rishonim say, you shouldn't say the bracha, I'll be your chametz, until you find the first piece of chametz. You shouldn't say the bracha at the beginning of the bedikah, in case you don't find any chametz. And others say, that's why they instituted the practice of hiding pieces of chametz. So you'll know in advance that it won't be a bracha levatov, that it'll be legitimate to recite the bracha. So if that were the only reason why the custom developed to place 10 pieces of chametz in advance, then it would only apply when you're doing bedikas chametz bizmanai and the bracha is recited. What if you do bedikas chametz koidem azman? So there's a machlokes in Rishonim whether a bracha is recited, and the Shulchan Aruch, there are more paskins in Shulchan Aruch that a bracha is not recited. Some rabbanim encouraged it, balabatim, that they had tzadik nefesh behemto. Every rabbi knows his balabatim. He has to know how to deal with his own balabatim. So some rabbis encourage their balabatim to say a bracha on the bedikah mukdemis also, to rely on the other rishonim against the Shulchan Aruch, because they know quite well that if you tell a balabas, do a mitzvah, but don't say a bracha, he's going to realize that there's something fishy over here. This is a shvach mitzvah, he's not going to do a good job on the bedikas chametz. So there are prominent rabbonim who tell a balabatim, you make bedikas chametz koidim zmana with a bracha, and it means you got to make a full-fledged bedikah, the whole works, the whole bedikah. So, But those who follow the kids of Shulchan Aruch, the way it's a big Shulchan Aruch, the little Shulchan Aruch, the Chayyad, you know, all the books, all the normal Sifrei Apsak. So it says you don't say a bracha when you do a bedikah mukdem. So if you're not saying a bracha anyway, so there's no chashash bracha about tovah. So maybe there's no need to put away the 10 pieces of chametz. So if that were the only explanation for this custom, then when you do a bedikah mukdem, there wouldn't be any requirement to place the pieces of chametz. However, in the Kabbalah Svarim and the Chassidish Svarim, they quote another explanation, that the 10 pieces of chametz somehow represent the Esos Sfiris, and the chametz represents the Yetzer Hara, as the expression appears in the Gemara, that the Bnei Yisrael are wonderful neshamas, but the Sorsha B'Issa means the Gaiva, and the Yetzer Hara is what causes us to be Nichshol and Adera. So the Yetzer Hara is always described as chametz. You talk about a person who used to be a tzaddik and then he lost his religious observance. So that's called lacha shehechmetz, after he turned sour. Chametz always has to do with Yetzer. So if you have 10 pieces of chametz, this represents the begimas, the averas that people did in the 10 different spheres, 10 different areas of human activity. And when you burn all of these 10 pieces, you got to burn at least 10 pieces, then it represents the concept of destroying the Yetzer. Okay? So if one is interested in fulfilling that aspect of the meaning of putting out 10 pieces, so it should apply even when you're performing a bedikah mukdemes, where no bracha is recited, so there's no shasha bracha levatola, but still you should put out the 10 pieces. It's interesting, in the days of the Bali Atesis, days of the Rishonim, there was a big machlokes, how many matzahs to have by the Seder, 2 matzahs or 3, because on the one hand, every Shabbos and Yom Tov, you have to have lechem mishnah. On the other hand, on Leil Pesach, the Gemara learns out from the Pesach, lechem oni, madaki shaloni b'prusa, and only has a broken piece of matzah. Why? As the Novi Yeshaya says, halafrois l'royiv lachmecho, the wealthy people who have big chalas and they throw out all the extra chalas, instead of throwing it out, break off a piece of the chalas and give it to the poor man, halafrois l'royiv lachmecho, break off a piece of the chalas. So you're going to give him a prusa, you're going to give him a broken piece of chalas. So on Pesach night, the din requires that you have to fulfill the mitzvah matzah on a prusa, because the Chumash describes the matzah as lechem oni, madarki shaloni b'prusa, the wealthy man gives the poor man a broken piece of matzah. So the Rishonim have a debate, how do these two blend in together? On the one hand, every yontav you need lechem mishnah, zecha l'mon, and on the other hand, you have to have a lechem mishnah means two shleimas, on the other hand, you have to have a prusa. So our practice is we assume that you got to have two shleimas plus a prusa. You got to have two shleimas to fulfill lechem mishnah. That's the underdikah requirement. Then you have to have a prusa to fulfill the requirement of lechem oni. Other Bali Atesis say no. If you have 2.5, so you're very rich. You got 2.5, so that's more than everybody. Everybody else on Shabbos Yom Tov only has 2. On Pesach night you have 2 plus a prusa. So where's the anias? So the lechem oni anias means you have 1.5. Instead of having lechem mishnah, two shleimas, you should be dafka not have 2 shleimas. Shadav could take 2 shleimas and break one of them and only have 1.5 instead of having 2. So in the Taisus, in the end of Pesachim, this is the whole machlokes, and the Rishonim had a big machlokes. But for many centuries, the custom, the practice was not a custom, The practice was like that opinion in Tosfos, that you have three matzahs, you break one, you're left with 2.5 matzahs. Till the Vilna Gaon changed it, and he didn't always follow precedent, so he reinvestigated the issue, and he felt that more correct is to have 1.5 matzahs, instead of having 2.5, to have 1.5 matzahs. So the Vilna Gaon had a student, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who founded the Volozhiner Yeshiva, which lasted in Volozhin for 90 years, then it was closed by the Russian government. So there were many Litvish Talmidei Chachamim who learned in Volozhin. So the practice by all of those people and by all of their descendants is like the Vilna Gaon, that they only have 2 months, they only have 1.5, they don't have 3. So it's interesting that in our generation, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik both had that practice. They both had these family traditions from the Volozhin Yeshiva, from the Vilna Gaon, to have 1.5 months. Instead of having 2.5, they had 1.5 months. Each one should follow whatever his family tradition is, whether to have 2.5 or to have 1.5. You are in Karpas, the Gemara points out, you have to have Netilas Yadayim without a... The Gemara doesn't say this, Shulchan Aruch says, you do Netilas Yadayim without a bracha because you're dealing with the Dovish Tevulo B'mashke. There are different Minhagim, and if you look in the Sifrei HaPaskim, they have the Machlekes, whether the entire family has to wash with karpas or only the Omer HaHagodah for HaMotzi, before you say Motzi Matzah, everybody has to wash until Siddat. It's a din, everybody has to wash. But for karpas, that's a machlokes. Tosfos comments on this Gemara in Arif Sochem that you have to wash with Dovish and Tevulah B'mashke. The whole explanation that the Gemara gives is because there's a concern of Tumas HaYadayim, the Yadayim Ashnios, from the Rabbanon, Pasel's Trumas, so since the Adayim Pasel Trumas, it makes the Mashkim into a Rishon, so the water that you'll touch will become a Rishon, will make the Karpas into a Shady, you'll eat it, it'll make you Tomei. So the whole explanation, the whole fantastic explanation for this Takana de Rabbanon, only makes sense this man that the Jews when this ran Tumah B'Tarah. This man is everybody's Tomei anybody. Everybody's Tomei anyway. Everybody went to a funeral. Everybody's an Avah Tumah. Forget about the Adayim Shneels. Forget about the whole story of Tumah. Everybody's Tomei anyway. So Tosfos says the whole takana is irrelevant. This man says the whole takana of Tilus Yadayim Shadav Shetuvul B'Mashke is only relevant at a time and a place when the people used to be Nizar and Tumah B'Tarah. This man says they don't need the whole thing, and that's why most people are lax all year long. They don't wash with Davish Shetuvul B'Mashke. They'll eat the grapes or an apple or a pear that was rinsed off and it's still moist on the outside with droplets of water, and they won't wash with Davish Shetuvul B'Mashke. It's only a Pesach, not that they wash. A Zechel of Mikdash. And they said the Pesach of Mikdash, everybody was Nizr and Tumah B'Tarah. So we want to make a Zechel of Mikdash. So those who follow that opinion, that the Netilas Yadayim on Pesach night is only observed as a Zechel of Mikdash, so many have the practice that only the father of the household washes. You only have to make a Zechel of Mikdash. One person has to make, just like the Vilna Gaon, and it's Ziv writes in the Hakdamah to his Hagon, just like the Vilna Gaon insists that the wearing of the kittel is a Zechel of Mikdash, because the Olei Regolim, when they were interested in eating Korbanos, Korban Pesach, or any Korbanos all year long, the Vilna Gaon says it doesn't make sense that they ate the Korbanos wearing their regular clothing. They probably put on a special Chaluk Lovan. The Gemara says it's inconceivable that Moshe Rabbeinu did the Avodah on Shivas Yemei HaMiluim, the last 7 days of Chodesh Adar. Aaron HaKohen didn't begin to do the Avodah yet. The first day that Aaron HaKohen did Avodah was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So Moshe Rabbeinu did the Avodah the last 7 days in Adar, the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim. So what begodim did Moshe Rabbeinu wear? So Gemara assumes Big Dekun is out of the question. Big Dekun, the special Big Dekun, is only for Aaron above. So what did he wear? It's regular clothing. So the Gemara says that's inconceivable. Cannot be that he wore the regular begodim to do the Avodah. So the Gemara says, Babeshimish Moshe called Shivas Yemei HaMiluim. Must have been machaluk lava, must have worn a white kippel. So the Vilna Gaon says the same thing. He thinks it's inconceivable, but that the Olei Regolim would eat karbonis in the regular suit, in the regular yontifika suit, that doesn't make any sense. They must have worn a chaluk lava. So the wearing of the kippel by the father of the household is a zechel amigdosh, and in the days of the Beis Amigdosh, all of the people who ate the korban pesach would probably wear a chaluk lava. So if you're interested in making such a zechel amigdosh, it's sufficient if the Omer HaHagodah does the Zechel HaMikdash. That's why many Yekis have such a practice that only the father of the household, the one who's reciting the Haggadah, he's the only one who washes for Karpas, and the others don't. But for those who are makbid all year long to wash, like the Rambam's opinion, on the Dovish Tevulah B'Mashke, that although the reason for the Takana doesn't really apply, this man is there, but the Takana still applies. You have to wash all year long for Dovish Tevulah B'Mashke. So on Pesach night, everybody has to wash the davishet tefillah b'mashkan, not just the father of the household. Of course, our practice is that when you wash with the karpas, you wash without a bracha. No brachas v'yisach. Why? Because it, exactly because of this machlokes, the Rambam and Tosfos. According to the Rambam, you wash with a bracha. And that was the practice of the Gaon Lagoyin all year long. Whenever he would wash with davishet tefillah b'mashkan, to eat grapes or to eat an apple that was rinsed off and was still had droplets of water on it, so he would wash until it's aligned with a bracha. But according to Tosfos, you don't have to wash at all, period. The whole takana doesn't apply to manazet, because no one's nizra and tumah v'tara anyway. So in order to satisfy the both opinions, so the common practice is that one washes with davishet tefillah b'mashkan without reciting a bracha. You wash to be machma for the Rambam's opinion, and you delete the bracha in order to be choshish for Tosfos' opinion. You shouldn't recite a bracha l'matom. In Yiddish folklore, they tell a lot of jokes about the Yeshuvanikas in Europe. The Yeshuvanikas were the Jewish farmers who lived far away from the cities. And they never saw any Rabbanim. They didn't know how to learn. They were very, very religious, but they were very ignorant. They didn't know any of the Din. So they tell the story about the Yeshuvanik. He had a son who knew how to learn a little bit, so the son was by him for Pesach. So the father washes until he's dying for Karpas, and he says, Lebrocha, Shekirishan, Baruch Ata Hashem, Lakin, Malchoyel, Shekirishan, Mimsas, Vitzibon. And then he sits down and he starts eating the karpas. So the son asks, Dad, what was that all about? So he says, it says, Nagori, you wash and you don't say the three words on the tibbles yadayim. So obviously that's not what it means. It means you wash and you don't say from the beginning to the end. You don't say the entire brach. Doesn't it? Yeshuvanik thought it means you leave out the last three words on the tibbles yadayim. You didn't understand the machlekes taisis and the Rambam, the machmarin, the machmarin. Regarding maror, the Mishnah lists off in Psochim five different vegetables that can be used for maror. And Yerushalmi, quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, says that they're listed in descending order. Preferable is to use the first one. If you can't get the first one, then use the second one. If you can't use, you can't find the second one, then use the third one. The first one to be mentioned is chosa, and the is chazeres. Excuse me, is chazeres, and Rashi translates chazeres as lettuce. We assume that it's romaine lettuce. Regular iceberg lettuce didn't grow in Eretz Yisrael. So the only kind of lettuce that they had in Eretz Yisrael at that time was romaine lettuce. Could be that regular lettuce has the same status as romaine lettuce, could be that not. But romaine lettuce for sure is what the Mishnah is referring to. So that's why many insist on using romaine lettuce. It was a Talmud who learned here in Yeshiva many years ago, who published an essay in the journal Gesher. Now he's a professor of botany, I think, in Big Gurion University. And his essay that was originally printed in Gesher in English has been translated into Hebrew. So in his essay, he explains that horseradish is bechlal not one of the five medium at all. And he documents it that it was introduced in the Middle Ages when the Jews started to move so far north that the lettuce was simply not available when it came Pesach time. So they had to find a substitute, so they decided to substitute it with horseradish. And he points out a very stark taina that the Gemara says explicitly all of the five vegetables that are mentioned in the Mishnah are leafy vegetables. That if you'll cut them, a sap will come out. Horseradish is not a leafy vegetable at all. It's a root. The whole thing is in Gansan, doesn't correspond living and dead to the Gemara's descriptions of these five minim of the Gemara. So the pashtus is that horseradish is highly questionable whether you eat it in the mitzvah. It's not a chum. It's not a hidden mitzvah to eat horseradish. Horseradish is not bitter. It's sharp. Two different sensations. Sharp is one sensation, bitter is a different. So it's not a midas chasidus to eat horseradish. Adarav, there's a big machlokes haposkim. Half of the poskim hold, you're not yetzer the horseradish unless you eat it as a chunk. If you grind it up, you're not yetzer. Others hold, you're not yetzer. If you eat it as a chunk, you have to dafki grind it up. So there's no way to be yetzer both opinions. So you have to have two kizaisim. One kizai chopped up, one kizai new. You can drop that. I used to learn b'charusim with Rabbi Neuberger's brother, Naftali Neuberger, who's a doctor, a medical doctor. So he told me that, in fact, that in New York City, the two nights of the Seder, the emergency wards and all the hospitals, is filled with more religious Jews than the rest of the year. It's filled with people who get sick from eating horseradish that they're not allowed to eat. It's with people who drink wine, they get sick from the wine. The people who eat too much matzah. That's terrible. That Manchev is saying that we're celebrating our freedom. The Jews have to get sick from eating things that they're not allowed to eat. You have to eat within reason. Everything has to make sense. The kezesim should be reasonable kezesim, and the mar should be a reasonable mar. The Yerushalmi says the reason why it's preferable to use romaine lettuce is because it has a sweet flavor. Why is it bitter? It's not bitter at all. So the Yerushalmi says if you would have left it in the ground longer, if you would have let it grow longer, it would have become bitter. So why is that a healing mitzvah dafket to use romaine lettuce that's sweet tasting? And if you would let it grow longer, it would be bitter. So the Yerushalmi says that's zecha v'shibud, because the shibud in Mitzrayim started off with a lot of sweet talk. The Mitzrayim said, why don't you do some work? We'll help you do the work. We'll look together for the government, for the improvement of the country, for the economy and everything. And then they conned the Jews into doing all of the work, and then we came up with this perek later. It started off as something sweet, and then it turned out to be bitter in the end. So the romaine lettuce is the best form. That's what Yerushalmi says. The best form of zecha l'maros chayim is the romaine lettuce. The Shulchan Aruch writes that there is a Shulchan Aruch writes that we eat Korach Zechel HaMikdash Kehillo, but it doesn't say that you have to say when you eat the Korach Zechel HaMikdash Kehillo. That says in the Haggadah that you say this is Zechel HaMikdash Kehillo. So the Mishnah Berurah has a Dir Halacha where he picks on the Haggadahs. Why do people say Zechel HaMikdash Kehillo before they're about to eat the Korach Kein Asil as much as HaMikdash Kehillo? He tells us that the Rishonim say, the Shulchan Aruch says, you should not be mafsik, you shouldn't talk the sicha de teilo in between the bracha, alachilas matzah or alachilas matzah, to let to eat the matzah and the matzah in the korach, and alachilas moror, you're not allowed to talk to let you finish eating the moror with the atzma, and then the moror in the korach. So if you gave this introductory explanatory speech, zechel amikdash kila, we're about to eat a whole explanation. What is this? A beginner's menu. You look at it in the Haggadah, you see what it says. What do you have to say it for? When you say it, it's a hefsik. It's a hefsik. So that's why many people don't say, Mishnah Berurah says, you don't have to say Zechel HaMikdash. And Shulchan Aruch says, this is a Zechel HaMikdash, you don't have to say it. Or if you want to say it, many people say it after they finish swallowing the whole Korach. Then they say, this was a Zechel HaMikdash. Explain what they just did before. Rav Soloveitchik used to give his suggestion that people usually say that a kricha is a sandwich. So in America we're used to a sandwich, a slice of bread on top, slice of bread on the bottom, and the tuna fish in the middle, or the egg in the middle, or whatever, the salami in the middle. So people usually assume that that's what the kricha is. You have matzah on top, matzah on bottom, and then you have the mortar in the middle, you have the horseradish in the middle, whatever. So Rav Soloveitchik said that's not what it means. Hayakorech means he wrapped around, one around the other. So what did he wrap around? So he said, well, he assumed you can't wrap around the matzahs. Rav Soloveitchik couldn't visualize a soft matzah that you could wrap around. Apparently there are those who have such soft matzahs. The Sfaradim have such soft matzahs. So he couldn't visualize. He assumed he'll use Ashkenazish and matzahs. You can't wrap it around, it's going to break. But if he used horseradish, the horseradish can fold in. Obviously, it's a dead giveaway. He used romaine lettuce. And he wrapped the romaine lettuce around the matzah. He said, that's what he meant. Hoyikorech. Matzah mar, v'yochol b'yachad. He wrapped around the romaine lettuce around the matzah. It wasn't the sandwich the way we used to. In Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam mentions a custom that many people have. Many people don't know of it. It's not that their family doesn't have it. They're just a lack of paying attention. The Rambam says that there was an old minhag that everybody eats some hard-boiled eggs at the Seder. The Rambam says the reason why is because the eggs are round, and usually we serve hard-boiled eggs to the Aveilim, at the Sudas Havro. And on Pesach night, after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, we're all in a state of Aveilim. We don't have any Korban Pesach, we don't have any Korban Chagig, we have nothing. And the first night of Pesach always turns out to be the first night, the same night as Tisha B'Av, on the Atbash system, Aleph Tov. First night of Pesach, the same night of Tisha B'Av. So we eat the hard-boiled eggs as a sign of avelus over the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the lack of all the korbanos. The Vilna Gaon is very upset about that. What do you mean? You're having Sudas Havro on Yom Tov. The simon of avelus on Yom Tov Pesach, he thinks it doesn't make any sense. So he insists that the eating of the hard-boiled egg is a zecha l'chagiga. He says the eating of the avikayman at the end, according to the Shulchan Aruch, has adapted the position of the Rosh. The eating of the kaimen is zecha l'pesach. The eating of the hard-boiled egg in the middle of the meal is a zecha l'chagiga, which was always eaten. The chagiga was always eaten before the korban pesach, so that the korban pesach should be nechalal asov. such a similar argument between the Mogen Avraham and the Vilna Gaon regarding the nature of wearing the kittel. What is that all about? So the Mogen Avraham says that the kittel is Yaskel Yom Amisa. The kittel is Big Day Mason, it's Tachrichim. Because on Pesach night, all year long, the Gemara says in Nenuches Chabatim, that when you have a meal, you have a wedding, whatever you have, you shouldn't have the most elegant. You should always have something missing. You shouldn't have all four courses. You should have missing some courses or missing something. You have to show that we live in a state of Churban Beis HaMikdash. We should cry over the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. The one exception to the rule is on Pesach night, Zman Chavisim. We're celebrating our freedom. So you should take out all the gold and the silver and have all full courses, everything. Everything should be fancy. And the Shulchan Aruch says, even if you lent money to a Nochri and the Nochri gave you silver or gold, Kalim, you should take out all the mashkainah, shal zahav, shal kesef, put everything on the table. Then after Pesach, put it back again. You shouldn't use it, but you should show all the gold to show Zman Chavisim. So the Magen Avraham says that there's a concern. If you're going to have such elaborate meals and such elaborate courses and such fancy, elegant silver and gold silverware on the table, everything is so elegant, so the person may be led to sin. So that we recommend the person should be Yaskel Yom Amisa. Someone in the family should wear, the father of the household who's reciting Haggadah, should wear a kittel, and that'll put a damper on the celebration. So again, the Vilna Gaon holds that that's ridiculous. What do you mean? Put on a kittel, Zechel Yom Amisa on Pesach night. So it doesn't fit in. So the Gemara gave his explanation, that the kittel is Zechet to the Zman HaMikdash, that he used to wear a Chaluk Lavan. He thinks all the other regalim must have worn a Chaluk Lavan, special white regalim, when they're interested in eating Karbonis. The difference, La'alacha, between the understanding of the Magen Avraham and the understanding of the Vilna Gaon is whether one who's in Avelus has to wear the kittel or not. So the Mishnah Brura quotes from the Magen Avraham. And that's the common practice, like it says in Mishnah Brura, that if the father of the household who's reciting the Haggadah is in Avelus anyway, so he doesn't have to be Yaskel or Yom Amisa. He doesn't need a kittel to remind them. His parent just died. He just got over Shiva. He just finished the Shloshim. So he's still in Avelus. He doesn't have to be reminded about Avelus. So then there's no need to wear a kittel. The minig is like that. And according to the Vilna Gaon, it's not so. According to the Vilna Gaon, it's Zechel HaMikdash. Even if the person who's reciting the Haggadah is in Avelus anyway, he should still wear the Chaluk Lavan in order to make this Zechel HaMikdash. At the end of the Haggadah, most people have the practice that we recite Echad V'Yodei. We say, who knows one, who knows two, who knows three, and so on. So Rav Soloveitchik once mentioned in class that he remembered as a child when he was brought up, there was an insistence on not saying Echad V'Yodei. He said, because when you say Echad V'Yodei, so you say, who knows, we believe in one God, monotheism. Yeah, there are those who still believe in Trinity. That those who used to believe in two gods, the God of light and the God of darkness, the God of good and the God of evil, the Greeks used to believe in 100 gods. You look in the Greek mythology, every other Bria was a god, everybody was a god. So that's all we believe in, monotheism, one god, as opposed to 2, 3, 4, 5, 18, 15, 20, and so on. So he said, no, one god, monotheism, that's one aspect of Hashem Echad. But Gemara has in Chagiga, Dav Gimel Amud Aleph, a different understanding. Hashem Echad means that God is unique. Because of the fact that God is unique, the Melech is only one God. There would be more than one, so the one God wouldn't be unique. But we mean to say, Hashem Echad, Atem Asisuni Chativ Achas Ba'olam, we believe that God is unique, something different from everything else in the world. So if you're going to say Echad Miyodeya, you're just cheapening the concept of Hashem Echad. You're lowering it down to the level of just saying that we believe in one God as opposed to more than one God. But that one God may be the same as you and me. He's the same as me, but he's a God, and I'm not. It could be that there's a Tzad HaShava between me and God. So he's cheapening the idea of Hashem Echad. So that's Rav Soloveitchik said. He remembered as a child in the community where he was brought up, there was an insistence on not reciting the Dafka, not to recite Echad Meyadeya, not to cheapen the concept of Hashem Echad, that should only have the meaning. It has that meaning also. We believe in one God. We do not believe in the Trinity. We don't believe in the God of light and the God of darkness. You say, Maliyah may be loyal. You say, the same God who created day, created night, he created everything. Chumash tells us that the main purpose of all the Nisim and the Flores on the occasion of Yetzias Mitzrayim was, L'mat t'sapa b'yozni b'incha ben mincha es asher salamdim in Mitzrayim, that we should tell over to our children, v'yidaitin ki adi Hashem, we should have yidias Hashem. That's the main purpose of telling over the Yetzias Mitzrayim, is to tell the moral of the story, that Hashem indicated, Hashem demonstrated that He was the one who created the world. That's why He had power to change Teva, to break Chukki HaTeva. Hashem indicated that there is Hashgacha Pratis, that there is Yediyah, He knows what's happening. And He rewards the righteous and He punishes the wicked. And He has the ability to do this. And He does step in and He does intervene. And He indicated that there was Torah and Hashem. He told Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave Nevuah. There is Nevuah. God knows what's happening and He can communicate with us and we can communicate with Him. And He gave Moshe Rabbeinu Torah and Hashem. And He told him the mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, Morah, and so on. So when we tell over the story, we shouldn't just tell over the story. We're supposed to tell over the story in such a way that we daten k'ani Hashem, to give the punchline, to give the moral of the story. All the Yud Gimel Kori Amunah were demonstrated to be true through all of the Nisim and the flaws of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we should make sure that we observe the Seder properly, but the whole punchline of the Sipi Yetzias Mitzrayim. Afeil HaYom.